You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio in Sarasota, Florida. My name is Emily, and my guest today on the phone is Rosalind Peterson. And Rosalind is the California president and co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, and also the president of California Skywatch. So, good morning, Rosalind, and thank you for being on the phone with me.
Well, good morning. It's an honor to be on the show with you today.
Rosalind, tell us basically about both of the organizations, Agriculture Defense Coalition and also California Skywatch, and how they both came about.
Well, California Skywatch, the website, came about when I decided that I was seeing a lot of man-made skies, persistent jet contrails that were turning into man-made clouds. They were exacerbating global warming, they were changing our climate, and they were having an impact on our natural resources. So I spent the last few years researching, and I put up the California Skywatch site in order to begin to let people know what was going on, let them have an avenue for seeing documents and pictures. And so that was part of my research base in the beginning, was to put up what was happening, questions I had, letters I had, and what I was learning about things like geoengineering, what I was learning about atmospheric heating and testing programs. I started to find information that related with experimental weather modification programs. Later, in 2006, I co-founded with another woman from Arizona, Bridget Conroy, the Agriculture Defense Coalition. And the two of us worked to stop experimental weather modification programs and legislation, which was current before the U.S. Senate in 2006. And now, once again, Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison has introduced a new weather mitigation modification bill that has no prior public notification, no oversight, no public members on their board, and that it allows anyone to modify your weather without your consent or notification or any input at all at this particular juncture. So we're working to defeat this U.S. Senate Bill 601. The Agriculture Defense Coalition also came about as a database for my entire 18,000 PDF file documents of my research going back since 2002, and it will be expanding again in the next week to cover around 32,000 PDF files on things like climate change, weather modification, impacts on agriculture, man-made clouds. It's going to have a whole range of chemicals. Most of the documents you will find on there are government documents, so that you can look at the actual documents, see what scientists, see what NASA and NOAA and Department of the Navy and Department of Energy are doing in certain fields, and so that you can make a better decision about what's going to be coming down, both legislation-wise and also that's happening now in our skies, so that you can kind of be able to look and see what's happening in the skies and also make some determinations about those things.
When you talk about weather modification, it sounds very almost science fiction-y. How long has this been going on?
Weather modification has been going on since the early 1940s. And there were experiments in England, there were experiments in the United States, there was hurricane modification. There was a number of things that didn't work out well, so some of the experiments came to ground to a halt after many years. But then in the Vietnam War, we started modifying the weather over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, Operation Popeye, in Cambodia. And we successfully modified the weather to keep that area soggy and rainy almost all the time. And then that led to the NMOD Treaty, which we are a co-signer of, which doesn't allow weather modification to be used for warfare purposes. However, in the meantime, many people were interested in experimenting with the weather. So in the last 10, 15 years, there's been more and more interest. So now we have lightning experiments. We have experiments in hail reduction. We have experiments in putting more snow in one place than ever before, like in Wyoming. We have experiments in Texas, in California. There are 60 current ongoing weather modification programs listed by NOAA on the Agriculture Defense Coalition website, and it's also a public document, so anyone can go and do the research and find the programs themselves.
When you say these experiments are currently going on, for example, you mentioned lightning experiments, are these something being done in a controlled environment, or are they actively being done outside in the environment, in the skies?
Right now, the atmosphere that we live in is being experimented upon as a physics laboratory. So anyone can do lightning experiments without our consent. Anyone, and the military, Eglin Air Force Base, for example, does lightning experiments, and that's in Florida. So there's a whole series of things that they can experiment with lightning, experiment with hurricane modification, use any chemical, use any method, and the public has no notification or oversight or control. Not even agriculture producers are told that these programs are ongoing many times.
When we hear jet contrails or persistent jet contrails, is that part of the geoengineering or the weather modification programs?
Both, because what's happening is that any jet that you see that leaves a persistent jet contrail, NASA studies, and you can go to the NASA website and look up man-made clouds, and you can see there are 50-100 studies or more on the subject. And what they'll tell you is these jets produce man-made clouds that exacerbate global warming because water vapor is a greenhouse gas. They add to the pollutant load because jet fuel emissions, according to the EPA, are highly toxic. And they produce these man-made clouds, cirrus clouds, white haze, and this traps the heat in. So they cause a heating effect, and when water vapor from the jets is combined with other greenhouse gases, then that exacerbates them and makes their impact much worse. The jets with their man-made clouds change our climate. NASA studies show that they exacerbate global warming, and so we're having different effects from jets leaving these type of contrails.
When you say that NASA knows that they exacerbate global warming, has that rung any alarm bells? Are they looking at maybe halting these programs, or is it just they're looking at it just as a side effect, collateral damage?
They're studying it. They know that it has increased between, for example, 1975 and 1994. Patrick Minnis noted that it increased global warming by 1 degree, and each year that they continue with more and more of these contrails turning into man-made clouds, it's beginning to exacerbate the global warming effect more. No one is really talking about this. Even the cap and trade energy bill, U.S. Senate Bill 1733, only addresses carbon dioxide, but it doesn't address any of the other greenhouse gases, nor does it address the water vapor or these man-made clouds that are exacerbating global warming.
Do we know what some of the chemicals are that are used when they do these contrails? Or these, you mentioned white haze. What does that consist of?
Well, right now, the only thing that I can prove is that the jets produce water vapor, ice crystals, and then you have normal jet fuel emissions, which EPA lists on their website. And so you have a combination of pollutants. You have nitric oxide, which depletes beneficial atmospheric ozone, according to a number of scientific studies. You have all of these chemicals, which are highly, highly toxic. And then you add that to the plumes, and so the end result is that you get these man-made clouds. If the jets are spraying anything else, which people suspect they may be, we wouldn't know what that was because we aren't able to do the testing at that altitude. We can only guess.
Yes, there's some schools of thought that even possibly things like Morgellons disease have appeared since these persistent jet contrails. I don't know if there's any studies that have actually been done on that. I would imagine though a lot of these pollutants would contribute to, at the very least, lung disorders, because we are going to inhale some of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. The jets are highly polluting. It's really awful, the amount of emissions that they put out. We're really not talking about doing anything about them. So you have asthma, you have, in other words, crop damage, you have short-term memory loss. All of these things can be associated with jet fuel emissions.
Rosalind, you at one time worked for the USDA in California as a crop loss adjuster. Did you notice at that time that perhaps this was a contributing cause?
I was working during the late 1980s and into the 1995-96. And we didn't see anything that I would attribute we saw more weather-related problems with crop losses, but we didn't see the burning and the crisping of the leaves like we do now. We didn't see the high UV radiation levels, because I went back and took a look. We didn't have high UV radiation levels like we do now into the 11s, which is in the extreme area in many areas. Sometimes in Florida, you were up to 11 or 12 in the reading, which is at the extreme end of the ultraviolet radiation levels. And we don't see the infrared is much higher. So that means that when you're out in the sun, you feel the heat and the intensity of the sun almost like it's cooking your skin. And we're seeing much more of that than ever before. And that's we had a week of that here recently in California, and it started turning the grapes to raisins. It got so hot, and the intensity of the UV radiation and the infrared was just awful.
Yet at the same time, it's supposedly putting up some kind of shield or block to filter the sunlight coming through?
Well, here's the problem. In order to increase crop production, you need direct sunlight. In order to get rid of molds and mildews and funguses and flu viruses and different things, one needs direct sunlight reaching the earth. It acts as a disinfectant. And the studies that I've been looking at and the researchers that I've been looking at say that if you begin to put something up that acts as a shield or cloud cover, then you're going to have less direct sunlight reaching the earth, and your crop production will be, a side effect is crop production will be reduced. There's a corn crop study at University of Illinois, which shows that if you have normal rainfall where you have increased cloud cover, your crop production in corn drops dramatically the more the cloud cover is there. And if we don't get direct sunlight, which is happening now a lot because of this man-made cloud cover, you're beginning to see higher increases in rickets in children from lack of vitamin D. That's a bone disease. There's a link between not enough vitamin D and breast cancer in women now that's coming out. The CDC and University of California, Berkeley, and Kaiser Permanente, and Kaiser's a health group, all are coming out now and showing studies that rickets are increasing in the United States in many areas, and that this increased cloud cover is one aspect of that increase, and so we're having less vitamin D, which also can lead to more health effects in children. So one of the things you don't want to do is stop direct sunlight from reaching the earth, because then flu pandemics could escalate because you have no direct sunlight hitting the earth. And that's why people are not sick so much in the summertime when there's more sunlight, and tend to have more health problems and colds and flu in the winter when you have a moist condition.
Rosalind, you were a keynote speaker in 2007 at the United Nations. What were the topics that you discussed there?
I talked about agriculture and man-made cloud cover. I did talk about the persistent jet contrails. I did discuss experimental weather modification programs and how anyone can modify your weather without your consent. I did talk about the impact of changing our climate on the microclimate from agriculture. And in every area of the United States, there's different climates which allow certain foods and grasses and trees to grow. And when you begin to have multiple weather modification programs and atmospheric programs, that can change these microclimates and cause crop failures in those areas.
How was your talk received? I mean, was there a lot of interest?
Oh, there was a lot of interest, and I still am receiving inquiries about that. There was a tremendous amount of interest worldwide because a lot of people in other countries, as well as in the United States itself, didn't know that we were modifying the weather on such a grand scale. They had thought that persistent jet contrails were really benign, and they didn't realize that water vapor was a greenhouse gas. So that when someone said, well, the contrails are made of ice crystals and water vapor, they didn't realize that this could exacerbate global warming. So this was, some did know, but a lot of the people that I spoke with at both of the presentations I gave at the United Nations really did not know much about this, and so it was kind of a revelation for them to look up and realize that what we're seeing in the skies are not necessarily benign.
Apart from Dennis Kucinich, who I'm aware of, Congressman Kucinich, who I believe tried to introduce a bill or investigation into this a few years ago, have any other members of Congress in this country shown an interest?
I don't think so, not that I know of. And the reason is because the early format of people talking about the jets and what they were seeing came out in the form of the word chemtrail. And it was never defined by any government agency. And the Air Force quite nicely, along with NOAA and NASA and all these other government agencies, and the universities came out and said, oh, that's normal, and what you're seeing is normal, and they attached the word conspiracy theory and hoax to it on their websites and in their writings. And so no elected official, even to this day, some are still having trouble that if you talk about the jets, they run the other way because they think you want to talk about a hoax or a conspiracy theory. And it is just in the last couple of years where I have made sure I have stayed away from the word chemtrail, but I've really talked about what the health effects are from what we're seeing and begin to talk about the NASA studies in man-made clouds, begin to talk about the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change, their book, Aviation and the Global Atmosphere, which also talks about these programs. So there's a whole series of things, and we're getting more traction all the time. But even now, in the energy bill that is up to be voted upon by the U.S. Senate any day now, what we're seeing is they're only talking about controlling carbon dioxide. They're not talking about controlling the jets and jet fuel emissions or the jet contrails they produce, or they're not talking about flying them at different heights, which would reduce the number, which could stop exacerbating global warming so badly. And they don't talk about any of the other greenhouse gases that they're going to be restricting. So the bill is quite limited to a very small focus.
It's listening to you, it's sort of ironic. We have this big pomp and ceremony about how we're reducing emissions and industry is going to be forced to reduce emissions, and yet we're flying up in the skies, pumping the poisons out sort of from above. And I think, obviously, as you've mentioned, most people are not really aware of it. How connected are these weather modification programs to the HAARP facility in Alaska?
Some of them are not connected at all. Some of them are done by states and counties and private individuals because anyone can modify your weather at this particular juncture in time. A university can. The military can modify your weather. There's no restriction on any type of atmospheric weather modification at this time. HAARP may have an effect on the jet stream, and it may be able to create heating or perturb the atmosphere to create storm fronts that go across the United States. that's quite a possibility, but I'm not an expert at HARP. So other than some rough thumbnail information, which I know, I can't go into much detail about HARP because I don't know it as well as I might.
One other question on the contrails, and then we had some other topics we were going to move on to. Have you found through your research that it's more prevalent in this country or even in certain states in this country, or is it really a worldwide phenomenon that it's being practiced?
Weather modification is being practiced in 50 countries around the world, and that means that they're all having a synergistic cumulative effect on our weather. And right now we can put one state or one county into drought conditions where another state or county gets more rain or more snowfall. So we have the power to alter the climate and alter the weather patterns because we can move weather, we can dissipate clouds, and we can move cloud patterns from one place so that they rain in one area and not in another. So being that we are doing this, the weather modification companies in the United States are openly admitting that they're modifying the weather in 50 countries.
So it is happening quite actively. It's very interesting in Florida where I am. Obviously, I'm not a native, but I have lived here for a few years. And the last 3 years, we've been almost completely hurricane free. And this year, we actually, I think, had one possible tropical storm, at least where I am. And the rest of the summer has been completely calm. And right now, almost mid-October, we're going through the most phenomenal heat wave that I've never experienced here. I'm wondering if that is possibly that they helped. I mean, 3 years without any kind of hurricane to me is very odd here. Could that be any kind of weather modification, do you think?
Oh, yes, very definitely. I know that NASA is openly modifying the weather with a private individual that was part of that owned the Dynamat Corporation. I think it's called Gel Inc. now or something like that. But he's a private individual that's been modifying the weather, and they're doing hurricanes. They're trying to modify hurricanes. And MIT Professor Emmanuel on the Discovery Channel spoke about using jets to release black contrails or carbon black on the West Coast and create these storm and different kinds of weather scenarios to move across the United States to push hurricanes off the East Coast. It doesn't surprise me that you have no hurricanes because we think they've started some of those systems here and rolled them off going across the United States. However, I think that they've left flooding in the Midwest and other areas. So it's something we need to look into because if these experiments are going on without any public consent or oversight, no congressional consent, or oversight, then what we do know about some of the programs because they're public record, and with what they may be experimenting upon without our consent, could be a disaster situation. Can you tell me what kind of heat you're having there?
I know it's up in the 80s, and Thursday, Friday, I think Wednesday, I was told were record highs.
Because they were conducting some experimental, the Navy was conducting some experimental atmospheric programs over you, and they did put up a dust cloud of aluminum oxide over you, and they said they were going to be studying it, and it was going to be expanding for several months, according to the University of Virginia. So one of the things that this Navy program, and you can go to the NASA website and look it up, it's the CARE program. It's the Charged Aerosol Release Experiment, C-A-R-E. And this might have an effect on your weather, and or in addition, they may be doing some other experiments. When you go outside, do you feel like your skin is burning or really over hot, too hot?
So badly, and I'm very fair skinned, but I've actually mentioned this to a few people lately, and I've said I just feel like when I walk, my skin hurts when I walk outside, and I don't sunbathe, I don't go to the beach, but literally walking from a building to my car, and I don't remember it being this bad before. In fact, right now from driving here, my skin is sort of feeling burnt, like I've been lying on the beach.
Yeah, it almost feels like your skin is cooking, and that's what we experienced here for about 2.5 weeks in California, which started to turn our grapes to raisins, unusual because normally they hadn't even hardly started picking here, and they had to rush into doing some picking because the grapes were just cooking on the vines. But what you're feeling is probably high UV radiation and then infrared radiation, very intense, where you feel this heat. And the ambient temperature may not be that great, but when you get out in the sun can almost feel like your skin's cooking. And we think that the Navy and other experiments done by NASA and the Air Force could be breaking down the barriers which protect us, and that's why we're feeling the intensity of that type of heat. And it's something that we need to have investigated for absolutely.
We're certainly doing that. Is exactly how I've described it to people. I feel as if I'm cooking. And I would think that would also increase skin cancer, which would be not a good thing. You know, while you just asked me what the temperature is here, I just looked online while I'm talking to you. Right now it's 82 degrees, but it's saying that for Saturday it's going to be 92 degrees. And I think for mid-October that's pretty ridiculous.
That sounds awfully warm for you.
And well, it's
to be showing that high.
Yeah, it's showing that for all week it's going to be in the 90s.
And I'm wondering what your infrared readings would be. My guess is your UV radiation is going to be extremely high, maybe really, really high in the 10 or 11 range, maybe higher. I'm not sure. We can look it up on the EPA website. The EPA has a website, and anyone can go to the EPA website and look up UV radiation, ultraviolet radiation, and you can even be put on a warning list so that when it gets to a certain height, your audience can be warned of when this is going to be really, really high in your area.
Yeah, I would think that would be a very, very good idea, because if people are not expecting it and they go out for their regular morning walk or whatever, it's, I think, probably very useful to know that. Rosalind, before we started, you mentioned that there are several major issues that you're concerned with right now. Do you want to tell us about some of the others?
Yes. One of them is that the Navy has set up a 5-year warfare testing programs in all of the areas of the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico. They're using sonar in these 5-year warfare programs. They're using bomb blasts, toxic chemicals. They've been approving the taking of NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, has been approving the taking of marine mammals, 11.7 million of them. It's just absolutely shocking to see what is actually going on with these programs. And they're being approved without public consent, for the most part, without public knowledge. And we're in a pitch battle here in California to stop the one that's going to be expanded into Northern California, Oregon, Washington, even over land areas. Idaho is involved in this. And so what we're going to be doing is I'm putting out flyers, packets. We're sending out 300,000 postcards with regard to the Navy program to get actually U.S. Senate and U.S. House hearings on this issue so that we can protect our coastlines, protect public health, and protect the fish, the marine mammals, the habitats. The Air Force is going to be bombing in the Gulf of Mexico.
When is that due to start?
It may already have started. I'm not sure on that one. It's Eglin Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. I can send you the Florida information today so that you'll have it.
Okay.
A lot of it is on, if you go to newswithviews.com and you go down the left-hand side column and you click on my name, my archive of articles will come up, and I have 3 articles on the U.S. Navy, 1 on the CARE program, And the links at the end of the articles are good, so you can actually look at the Navy documents, you can look at the Navy maps, and you'll be able to see those programs.
And you mentioned that there are some other major bills or issues going through the Senate right now, or due to go through very soon?
Well, there's two bills. There's U.S. Senate Bill 601, which is now passed out of committee. It's Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison's weather mitigation bill. It's a short bill, easy to read, but it will allow anyone to modify your weather anytime using any techniques for any purpose. And this is one bill that we need to defeat in the U.S. Senate, without a doubt, because if this bill goes through, we will have no check and balance for anything that anyone wants to do, any private company, private individual, university, the military, anyone will be able to modify your weather without your consent or any public notification. The other bill is the energy bill, which is sponsored by Senator Kerry and Senator Boxer. It's the climate, it's a climate security act, and what it does is it sets up a cap and trade system, an unregulated one, where offsets or credits are going to be sold to polluters so that they can buy the right to pollute and keep on polluting. It's a very bad money market scheme. I'm totally opposed to this because even in California, they went and measured our trees, and they're going to be selling the credits from our trees to corporations in the United States or overseas that pollute so that they can keep on polluting. Now, what that means is that the trees take in and store carbon dioxide, and they give off oxygen. The oxygen is considered a credit. So now, money market middlemen and banks and investors can purchase tree credits, and they don't purchase the actual trees. They just purchase these credits, and then they sell them to polluters so that the polluters can offset their pollution or our elected officials can travel in their jets like Governor Schwarzenegger in California and Speaker Pelosi. They buy these credits, and then they say, well, we've offset our jet pollution. Now, they didn't put anything in any bills to reduce the pollution of the jets that they're using. They just said that we'll buy these credits, and since we've got the money, we'll enrich the middleman, and we'll buy the credits so we can keep on polluting. So the cap-and-trade provision of the bill is absolutely terrible. If you want to reduce pollutants, you just have the EPA set standards, find the polluters immediately. If they pollute, use the money for alternative sources of cleaner energy, and it could start right away. There wouldn't have to be this 10-year, 15-year delay while these credits are being sold back and forth.
So in other words, the organic farmer down the street can sell credits for his sustainable practices, and the munitions factory up the road can continue to pollute at the same level because they're buying credits?
Yes.
Wow.
That's correct.
Yeah, it certainly isn't promoted that way, is it?
Well, it's not promoted that way, but if you go to Senator Kerry's website and you look at the bill on his website, and when you go to a summary, which there's a pollution reduction investment summary there, that tells you, it's another phrase for cap and trade, but it tells you about pollution reduction investment. And it's just absolutely shocking because they really say, well, we're going to ask industry to really reduce their pollution. But if they can't, we'll just sell them offsets and they can continue to pollute. So the bill isn't going to reduce carbon dioxide. And that's the only thing, all these other greenhouse gases, and the only thing they're going to regulate is carbon dioxide. There's nothing else in the bill. They're even going to have to gut the Clean Water Act in order to sequester carbon under this plan. So we're going to lose our Clean Water Act standards, because if they sequester, they know that putting carbon in the ground will pollute water supplies.
I'm on the newswithviews.com website, and I'm just rereading what you mentioned earlier about the decimation of more than 11.7 million marine mammals. Apart from the monstrous just brutality of that and the unknown effects that that will have on the ecosystem of the oceans, what's that going to do to food supplies?
Well, it would have to, when you are taking bomb blasts, submarine warfare training, above water detonations, underwater detonations, when you're putting in the whole realm of toxic chemicals, and I have a whole list, there's hundreds of them, listed on the Navy Environmental Impact Statement. And you can look at any of their environmental impact statements, and they'll tell you that they're going to impact the turtles, the marine mammals, the fish, birds, everything. And they're going to be bombing the actual habitat so that you're going to not only hit the migrating marine mammals, but you're going to hit those that are stationary that feed migrating marine mammals. So it's an unmitigated disaster. They've already started the warfare programs in some areas in Florida. They've started them in Southern California already, state of Washington, Hawaiian Islands, Marianas Islands in the Pacific. They've got all these ranges and more planned, each with a five-year redundant warfare testing program. I don't see how any of our oceans are going to withstand, because they're even going to be using futuristic weapon systems as well as testing ones that we already know how they work.
I would also think it can possibly or undoubtedly increase the risk of tsunamis.
I would think so, because it could trigger earthquakes. Because, for example, where I live in Northern California, we have the San Andreas and other faults. And if you start having bomb blasts over our fault lines and all along the ocean floor, very easily you could trigger an earthquake, a big one. And no one is looking at earthquake faults. Our elected officials are hiding in their offices in Washington, D.C., and not saying that they're going to have congressional hearings on this, which we're absolutely asking for now. And they're not saying that we're going to put a hold on any more of these warfare programs until we see if there's a better way to do this, or a way that we won't impact all of these fish habitats, marine mammals, everything.
Rosalind, jumping back, a thought I had also on the weather modification and the sky, the white haze and so on. Is that going to have an effect on trying to instigate solar power? Is that going to affect the rays that come through to go on the solar panels?
It already is. It would affect electric cars, and it would affect solar panels on homes. And a friend of mine in Shasta County built a model solar home, a state-of-the-art model. And they've had so many persistent jet contrails leaving these man-made clouds that at times he's 40 to 60% down in power production from these state-of-the-art solar panels. And he said it's just awful. And he said the more we keep the cloud cover, the less this method of, in other words, investment is going to work. We need direct sunlight for solar to work, or electric cars, or anything that's powered by solar. So when you start to allow, in other words, the jets to create these man-made clouds, white haze, reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth, even the Navy's CARE program over you, that where they put in this aluminum oxide dust cloud, that reduces the amount of sunlight and will warm you up. And, you know, in other words, it's going to create this cloud, which is going to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth as well. So you'll have more intense heat, quite possibly, from this. So we look at this as using our atmosphere as a physics laboratory, as one of these Navy personnel talked about, is how wonderful it is that we can go and, you know, in other words, do all these experiments, whether we bomb the moon and maybe get the moon off kilter from its off its axis, or get it out of, in other words, circling the Earth at the same rate that it's doing. All these things, you know, there's no public oversight right now. We have no say. We're just told, or we just see it happening, and we don't have any oversight. We need to gain control of these entities that are doing the testing and say, no, there has to be hearings, there has to be public oversight, and we have to look at what we're doing, because we could impact weather, climate, food supply, human health, all these things.
Are you finding with the new administration there is more cooperation, or it's just business as usual and closed doors?
It's hard for me to say, but I look at the appointments of the Obama administration. We have Energy Secretary Chu, who was formerly head of Lawrence Livermore Lab, who is in favor of genetically modified crops. I went back and did a lot of research, and he's for nuclear power, and just now Florida approved a new nuclear power plant. The energy
actually three of them they approved.
Three of them?
Yeah,
I knew about one.
Yeah, we did a show on that recently. Yes.
But see, they're going to take this energy bill, U.S. Senate Bill 1733, they're going to provide the insurance, because the insurance companies won't insure these power plants. So they're going to provide the funding and the insurance for these new power plants. And the bill is just riddled with new power plants, nuclear power plants. So we're having that difficulty as well, that this is a nuclear power bill. And so the people that Obama has put into office are proponents of nuclear power, bringing it back. So where we fought them off here in California because they wanted to put them, one, for example, in Point Arena, they were going to put it on an earthquake fault, and we stopped that one. Rancho Seco Nuclear Power Plant had so much failures that they finally shut it down permanently. The one in Eureka, California had to be finally shut down because of accidents. So the record of the nuclear power industry is pretty bad. And now, some of the nuclear power plants back east have trouble still. Connecticut Yankee is one that's had a great deal of trouble. So now this new bill is talking about bringing nuclear power back with, then you have heating of the water, you have water vapor releases, it takes cold water to cool these plants, so you've got to have a source of water, and the water goes back in the rivers and streams too warm. You've got uranium mining, you've got nowhere to store the nuclear waste. I mean, all of these things are going to be taking place if this bill passes. So there's a lot of reasons to defeat this bill.
Yes, there certainly are, and there's a lot of reasons to try and become as aware as possible about what's going on. Rosalind, slightly off topic, and I don't know if these are two issues you have comments on, how do you feel? I see both of these as total insanity. One was NASA I believe they did it last night or yesterday, flying a rocket or something, a missile into the moon, and also the Hadron Collider. How do you feel about those two schemes?
Yes. I don't think that we should be bombing the moon for any reason. That's a waste of our tax dollars just for experiments. We could be using the money for other more beneficial things for people here on Earth. And I think the more atmospheric experiments we do using our atmosphere and the moon as laboratory science could have possible negative effects on us all here. So I think that should come to a grinding halt. The Large Hadron Collider at CERN, Switzerland, years ago they were going to put it and have it operational in Texas. And that was stopped. And so then they just shifted and decided they would put it over into Switzerland. And they've had some problems with it going online. But they keep trying to do this experiment. Well, this is not an experiment that's going to... It may answer some scientific physics questions, but it's not an experiment that's going to benefit mankind particularly. So just to know a few for things for some physics reasons... They want to go ahead with these tremendous experiments at great cost. And we are definitely putting a lot of money into that program as well. And the scientists are excited because then they can experiment and find out these questions that they have. But on the other hand, the money that's being spent and the risks that are being taken are tremendous in comparison to any small benefit to a small group of scientists.
Right, and the absolute billions being spent at risk of goodness knows what possible reactions, particularly the Hadron Collider, just is mind-boggling to me, and I certainly don't think we should be blasting missiles off at the moon. Rosalind, thank you so much for talking to us today. Anna, as
can
a closing...
I,
yes,
can
please
Can I
do.
Close with one, two sentences, three sentences,
yes,
actually?
Yes, absolutely.
Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Barbara Boxer, and Senator Whitehouse from Rhode Island wrote a letter on June 19, 2009. And in the course of this letter, this is what it says. And it's about the Navy warfare testing program. It says, in many regions, the Navy plans to increase the number of its exercises or expand the areas in which they may occur. And virtually every coastal state will be affected. Some exercises may occur in the nation's most biologically sensitive marine habitats, including national marine sanctuaries and breeding habitats. In all, the Navy anticipates more than 2.3 million takes, or the killing or harming of marine mammals. They define it as significant disruptions in marine mammal foraging, breeding, and other essential behaviors. Per year, or 11.7 million losses over the course of a five-year permit.
It's devastation. It really is on such a monstrous scale.
Yes.
And I think as a race and a species to be committing such a hideous crime, which it is, a crime against living sentient beings, is, I think the repercussions for the human race is horrendous, whether people want to acknowledge something that esoteric or not. Never mind the actual physical damage that it's going to do.
Yes, I agree.
Rosalind, your website's agriculturedefensecoalition.org. There's also californiaskywatch.com, of course, preceded with www. Also newswithviews.com/Peterson/Rosalind. Are there any other very relevant links, or can people just go to those sites and find all the information?
People can go to those sites, or they can call me at 707-485-7520, or they can email me at info@californiaskywatch.com. All of this data is online. People can look at the Navy programs, the environmental impact statements. They can look at the weather modification maps. It's all online, and it's there. And if you have any problems or need additional information, they can call me.
Well, Rosalind, once again, thank you very much. I hope we can talk again soon and get another update from you about what's going on. Thank you for the great work that you do.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. It's been a privilege.
You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, also streaming live at WSLR.org. And this show can also be found on iTunes or also at 2012.podomatic.com. We're going to take a short music break, and then I will be back talking to Bonnie Hoag about the Sky Awareness Week. Welcome back. You're listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio. My next guest is Bonnie Hoag, and she is the founder of the Bonfire Coalition. She's going to be talking to us about the organization and also the upcoming National Sky Awareness Week. Bonnie, thank you for being on the phone.
Thank you for having me. Sky Awareness Week is actually more than national. It's international, and it's October 12th through the 19th, coming right up. Sky Awareness Week, and after the 19th of October, it will become Sky Awareness Every Day. So we're not letting this fall by the wayside. It is described on the website, and I'll speak about that in the websites in a moment, but it's described as an international celebration of the sky and the assertion that the sky belongs to all of us. People who have been concerned about if they've been watching pluming persistent jet contrails, this is an opportunity to get your neighbors and friends to look up and say, no, that is not commercial jet traffic. That's intentional. Those X's, crosshatches, parallel lines, pluming out into the sky, expanding. veiling the sky, occluding the sun. For us in the northern U.S., we see it on a daily basis. Very, very troubling. And so Sky Awareness Week is hoping to get people to look up, but then to look up long enough that they can actually watch the trails as they plume, combine, veil the sky, occlude the sun. And also two of the issues that come up again and again in climate change discussions are the holding of heat against the planet and the dimming of the sun or the occlusion of the sun, loss of photosynthesis, and so on. And yet, persistent jet contrails, which have really only been in existence for about 20 years, are not at all a part of the discussion. So we're hoping to help people learn how they can bring persistent jet contrails into the discussion of climate change. So we're not just out there mitigating and geoengineering when we're already geoengineering. If people are interested in participating, they'd like to create some kind of a nonviolent action or activity in their community. Nobody that I know of in Florida or elsewhere in that corner of the world, although now that I'm thinking about it, we have internationally, we have Cyprus and Greece and France and Italy have come on board doing actions, taking actions in their countries. But we'd love to have more and more people.
Bonnie, which state are you located in?
In eastern New York State. I look out my window and I see the mountains of southern Vermont.
And do you notice particularly up there a lot of sky activity?
Yes, very disturbing.
And how long have you noticed that?
Well, what's funny about this is I was actually photographing them for about 10 years before I had that painful epiphany that I think a lot of people have to go through when I realized there was a grid in the sky. It was in February 2008, and my partner said, come out here and look at this, and we watched in the course of less than an hour as that pluming grid expanded and did, as I said, expanded, veiled the sky, and occluded the sun, the rising sun. It was early in the morning, very, very disturbing, and I just really, as I know happens for many people, I just went into a state of shock. Prior to that, I had thought, well, those are odd, or those are artful, and I photographed them, so I have quite a long history of photographing them and thinking of them as being natural phenomena, and oh my goodness, look at that, isn't that amazing? So now to know that these are being produced, that they're artificial, that they have purposes which are not readily available to us, even though we are underneath it every day, it is certainly of great concern, should be a great concern for us because it's happening without our permission. It's really quite a shock to have to cross that threshold. There are no environmental impact studies going on. We know from some of the patents that we have that are related to weather modification, weather manipulation, that there are some pretty awful chemicals that are used to create not necessarily what we're watching plume, because it's hard to get that information, but certainly things like barium and aluminum, metals and lead, things that we wouldn't really necessarily want to have falling out of the sky on us. So without our permission and without any oversight, with no regulation, this is happening. And we'd really like to have people say, no, we will not allow this. This is not acceptable. The Bonfire Coalition, as I said, is at californiaskywatch.com. If people want to go and take a look at what we have there, for Sky Awareness Week itself, we have a planning packet. If people want to take some nonviolent actions to hopefully artfully and good-humoredly, if possible, to bring people's attention to what's happening in the sky and to learn more about it themselves. But if people want to communicate with me directly by way of email, it's bonfire, B-O-N-N-E, underscore, F-I-R-E at yahoo.com. They might just mention that they heard us speaking on your program, and maybe that in the subject line, and just let me know what they want to know about. We certainly have lots of documents, and we have documents that have to do with HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, which is definitely playing with the atmosphere. We have information about the CARE project, the charged aerosol release experiment that was just sent out in a cloud of charged aluminum oxide particles over the Atlantic Ocean. We have information about 2025, which was the Air Force's dreaming document from 1996 of how they would own the weather in 2025. So they're not shy about any of the NASA, the Air Force, the Navy, or the Army about how they're intending to use the atmosphere. And some of it is more than troubling. It needs to have us rise to the occasion as people who live on this planet and say, no, you may not.
Bonnie, just in closing, we were just going to talk briefly about the National Sky Awareness Week. What would you like to see listeners and the general public doing to increase the awareness and perhaps to help bring about the changes that we need and the demands on our legislatures?
I would urge people, first of all, to get grounded in the information that is there on those websites. Rosalind Peterson is to be credited for the research that she has done, that everything we assert will have documentation to support it. And so it is just, it's like a college, I guess. It's a library, actually, of documents, many, many of them government documents, which are often spelling out precisely what they are doing. Even though the persistent jet contrails, we have not been able to crack that open in terms of precisely its purposes. We have to speculate because we're outside of that military loop. But if people would get themselves informed, or if they're already informed, please communicate with me. Let me know if they want to take actions wherever they are in the world listening to our voices.
Bonnie, thank you very much for talking to us today. And National Sky Awareness Week, or International Sky Awareness
Week,
is coming up October the 12th to the 19th. So something certainly for people to check into and get more information on, and perhaps become more actively involved in asking questions and demanding answers.
Yes, and asserting that the sky belongs to all of us. It's not a militarized zone. Well, it is, but we don't want it to be. So we have to claim it back. And I wanted to say thank you to you for giving me this opportunity, because this is the kind of program that helps to break through the block, the blackout.
Well, we certainly try. Thank you, Bonnie. You've been listening to 2012 and Beyond on WSLR Radio, 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota. My name is Emily, and I will be back again in 2 weeks, so I hope you will join us then.